This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. If you're not here at home starting the fire, hopefully you're out in your car going to the grocery store. Because if you didn't hear Rusty, snow, our third snow store of the year coming up. So sit down, get comfortable. We're going to talk about the Virginia Festival of the Book. Pretty cool. Everyone knows about the Virginia Film Festival. More people should know about the Virginia Festival of the Book. One of our guests today, Nancy Damon, she's the program director. And good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Well, I thank you so much for being here. Next year, though, I think we should move it back a week or two. Instead of me calling you like 3 days beforehand saying, hey, Nancy, why don't you come on and do this book festival show? That way people still have an opportunity to, and we'll get into it, but there are some things that are specific number of tickets.
Yes.
We need to have more people with opportunities to get those special security tickets.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you all about those because there's always a way to scalp. I've learned that in my life. You can always scalp.
We don't like to talk about that.
No, but I can talk about it.
Okay, you
can't talk about it.
Okay.
I can talk about it. Also in the studio today, Dr. Barbara Perry. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Rick.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
About my background, I am currently a senior fellow and co-chair of the oral history program, in which we interview all of the top aides to presidents and cabinet officers, and the Miller Center has done this for every president from Jimmy Carter onward.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being in here today.
My pleasure.
We also have Lex Raby, an author. Lex?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. The names of your books?
I am the co-author of the Quarantine Trilogy, which is a young adult dystopian series. And I mentioned I'm a co-author. I have a writing partner. His name is Thomas Voorhees, and we write under the name Lex Thomas.
Clever.
Yes, very.
I like that. And then last but not least, the gentleman who's been with us here before. That's why you're last today, Paul. Professor Paul Cantor. Good morning.
Good morning.
And your background?
I'm a professor of English at the University of Virginia, but that's my day job. In my secret identity, I'm the world's expert on The Simpsons and write about popular culture. I've got two books, Gillian Unbound, Pop Culture in the Age of Globalization, and most recently, The Invisible Hand in Popular Culture, Liberty versus Authority in American Film and TV.
And that's what you were here before, back in September.
Yes.
Yeah, I found that to be fascinating. I was so glad when Nancy said that you were going to be here with us today. That means nothing against Lex and Barbara, because I'm sure that I'll be equally excited that everybody was here. And the show will be recorded and podcast, by the way. But I haven't read your books. Paul, oh, let me read his book. So let's jump in. Virginia Festival of the Book. Nancy, March 19th through the 23rd, so upcoming this week, correct?
Yes, that's right. Starts on Wednesday.
What's the starting event?
Well, the opening ceremony is at the public library downtown, and Rita Mae Brown, who was our first luncheon speaker 20 years ago, is going to reprise her role and be our speaker at the opening ceremony. This is the 20th.
20 years? Really?
20 years, yes.
Can you believe it? Well, actually, in all honesty, no, I can't, because while I've lived in Charlottesville that whole time, it seems like that you, or that many of our festivals, are elbowed to the side by the Virginia Film Festival.
Well, that's your opinion.
Well, and I don't mean that in fair toss. But what I mean is in terms of publicity. And those folks have to pay for those tickets.
Well, we do have some ticketed events, but we have about 130 adult events that are free and open to the public. You just walk in. We have about 60 programs in area public-private schools, and we have a whole series of programs called Story Fest on Saturday and Sunday for children of all ages.
I'm excited to talk about this for an hour because I read regularly. I don't even know how many I read, but I was telling Paul before the show started about how his book made it to my keeper bookcase. as opposed to those that I finish with and then donate to the library for the book sale. So I'm excited to find out what's happening here, that because I hadn't even picked up the, what is this, the guideline?
This is the printed program, which the Daily Progress does, and it only came out. You couldn't have gotten it in the paper until this morning.
Okay, well, good.
So you're not behind.
Many people would disagree with that. Talk about what is the goal of the book festival in terms of, I see everyone here, an adult, a male and a female, talking about what's going on. You mentioned a story fest. Mm-hmm. Are there family events? Who are you expecting and trying to gather?
We expect everybody. Our goal is to reach as many kinds of readers and would-be readers in the community as possible, with as many kinds and varieties of book topics as possible. You want me to give you a few examples?
Yeah, give me some highlights.
Okay, so we clearly have books on popular culture. We have cooking programs. We have sports programs. We have memoirs and biographies. Programs with books for young adults and children, graphic books, programs on how to get published and how to promote books if you're a writer yourself. We have a crime wave. We have a love fest of romance writers. And as you mentioned, we have a story fest for parents and children of all ages on Saturday and Sunday of the festival. So that's just a few. I mean, we have programs on all war, peace, you kind of name it. Everything from A to W. We couldn't come up with a Z. But
so we have our three writers here today as well. That's Nancy Damon, the program director of the Virginia Festival of the Book. The Virginia Festival of the Book
is produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities.
Very nice. So I can mark that off my list. We'll do that another two or three times. But that's an important, actually, because you don't charge for tickets. It's right. Important to have somebody like the Humanities.
Well, the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities is our state humanities program. Every state has a program. And we get some federal funding, some state funding, local funding, and then local sponsors, and then people just like you who donate to make the book festival free and open to the public.
So off to our writers for a moment. Nancy mentioned the A through W. U, A through W. So Barbara Perry, Presidential Oral History Program, Project Director for the Edward M. Kennedy Oral History. Where are you falling into this?
I would be B for Barbara and B for biography, and then K for Kennedy. My book is on President Kennedy's mother and Edward Kennedy's mother, Rose Kennedy, the amazing matriarch of the most potent political dynasty in the United States. And she lived to be 104, and she saved everything, apparently, that crossed her desk or through her hands. And so I spent many, many years at the Kennedy Library in Boston going through her 250 boxes of archives and learning the inside story of this very public woman.
It seems like, I mean, for many people, and you mentioned this as well, the Kennedy family sort of being the at least the political family of the United States. Are you now working on the Clinton family? Who's jumping into that? The Clinton family and the Bush family seem that they would certainly be two and three.
Well, dynasties have become our life at the Miller Center because, as I say, we've done every presidential oral history from Carter onward. So we have finished the Clinton project, and that will be released on October the 10th, so people should be looking for that. We released the Bush 41 project in October of 2011, and we're halfway through the Bush 43 project.
And then there might be the Clinton 45 project and the Chelsea Clinton, 56 project. I mean, I say that, and you laugh about that, but when we talk about family dynasties, that's sort of what happens. It's Chelsea Clinton may not run for president, but she will certainly, I guess the expectation as of now is that with her parents, she will be a very strong and notable person and the history of the United States.
Well, she will be, although I have to say I think I'm going to side with my namesake, Barbara Bush, and say, are there not other families in the United States who might be producing leaders? And that's not to denigrate any of these people, Democrats or Republicans, but I think we should widen the circle a bit.
I would be very happy of that. Lex Raby, a quarantine series. And we'll go into a little bit later on in the hour. We'll get into some more specific questions for each of our writer guests. But Lex, what brings you to participate in the festival?
Well, I actually grew up in Albemarle County, and I lived in Los Angeles for about 13 years, and recently moved back with my family. Wife and two daughters, and we are back in the Virginia groove. And I was part of the festival of the book last year, and it was a terrific experience. It's great to be part of the children and teen aspect of the festival, and that's one of the panels that I'll be on this go round.
Paul Cantor. And his book that we covered together very strongly, The Invisible Hand in Popular Culture. Where do you fit in to the festival? Because, I mean, Nancy mentioned pop culture, but to me, your pop culture has a strong analytical part to it.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting paradox in that my book is about film and television, and supposedly those are the media crowding out books. But in fact, it's an interesting phenomenon. There's a whole several series of books now about popular culture and philosophy, Open Court, University Press of Kentucky, Blackwell. There's a lot of fascination with film and TV that leads people to want to read books about them. Especially television shows have become so complicated now, you need a book to explain them. And so it's created a whole new industry of which I'm a minor part.
Well, I don't know. You got 2 hours on this show within 9 months or so. That's major here at WNRN.
Okay, I was just trying to be modest, but you detected the false modesty.
Nancy Damon, she's a program director at the Virginia Festival of the Book. How do you make this happen? I mean, you talked about over 100 different events, mm-hmm. All the different guests that go along with that. Mm-hmm. Do you start, so the festival will end on March 23rd. Do you start, say, maybe take one day off and start on the March 25th to plan for next year?
Yeah.
But you have to go to, our three guests today are all locals, mm-hmm. but you have guests coming from outside of the area.
Right. We have a guest coming from Australia. I bet that's the farthest anybody's ever come. We start, actually, even before this festival, we're sort of gathering ideas for the next festival. But, you know, we are always looking at what's coming out, what's being published. Of course, we tap into many. I mean, because we have so many wonderful writers that
live in this area. What's the most difficult thing to make happen?
Oh, well, to schedule, you know, we have about 6 programs in every time slot. And people call me up and say, why did you schedule 2 programs that I wanted to go to at the same time? It's very hard to do the scheduling because you have to take into consideration the venues you have, the authors you have, when they can come, because most people can't come for the entire 5 days, and also not put 3 poetry programs at exactly the same time. You don't want to compete, you know, or 3 biography panels or anything that are, you know, that's what I mean. It's scheduling is probably the trickiest.
And then today, actually, you can't stay for the whole hour because you're leaving here to go put the tickets together.
We're putting the tickets together for the ticketed events, which, might I mention those now?
Of course.
Sure. Okay, so we have a leadership breakfast at 7:30 on Wednesday morning, and Dan Pink is coming for that. The tickets are not
Dan
quite...
Dan Pink?
Yeah.
Drive.
The Cell is Human.
Yes, Drive. I read that book.
Yes, he's pretty well known. He started out as a speechwriter for Al Gore, by the way. Kind of interesting background. We have a luncheon with David Baldacci, which is actually sold out, and a brunch with Lisa Scottolini, a crime writer, on Saturday. That's sold out, but we do have some other events there's still tickets for. One of them really falls into our theme of the 20th anniversary. It's called Homecoming. It's Saturday night at the Paramount. Because it's our 20th year, the tickets are $20, and we've invited five authors. You know, we have hundreds of favorite authors, but five of our favorite authors: Lee Smith, Rena Mae Brown, E. Ethelbert Miller, who's a poet, Kwame Alexander, who's a children and youth writer and also an African-American poet, and Sonia Manzano, speaking of popular culture, who's been Maria on Sesame Street, all the 40 years of Sesame Street.
Wow.
It'll be quite fun, and you can buy those tickets at the Paramount.
Can people still volunteer?
It's a little late to volunteer. We've already had our training sessions, and people are in place already. We use about 200 volunteers during the festival.
Wow. Again, we are talking about the Virginia Festival of the Book from March 19th. What is that, Wednesday?
Wednesday
through Sunday, Wednesday, March 19th through the 23rd of this year. Our guest today, Nancy Damon, she's the program director, and three authors, Lex Raby, Dr. Barbara Perry, and Paul Cantor.
WNRN thanks the following for their support of independent music radio.
T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing, an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. T&N Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com.
Maharaja Indian Restaurant at Route 29 and 139 Zan Road. Maharaja's daily lunch buffet changes every day with butter chicken and vegan options on Thursday, lamb curry and mixed vegetable korma on Friday, palak paneer and kofta tikka masala on Saturday, and baked salmon, shrimp, and chicken on Sunday. Maharaja-Indian-Restaurant.com.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being with us today. Again, we're talking about the Virginia Festival of the Book. It kicks off on Wednesday. This is Charlottesville's 91.9 and Richmond's 103.1. Nancy Damon is the program director. I don't know if it's the worst thing that happens, but with all the stuff that gets looked over, and then after it's too late, after it's published, somebody goes, uh-oh.
Yes. We hope this is our worst uh-oh of this year. The Daily Progress printed a fantastic program for us. It was in the Daily Progress this morning, and it's also available already in bookstores and hotels and places where people might drop in. And when we looked at the grids, the schedule for each day, the first day is Wednesday the 19th, as you said. On Thursday, it says it's Thursday the 21st of March, when actually Thursday is the 20th. There's a very simple solution to this. You take your pen with your printed program and you cross out Thursday 21 and make it 20, and then you make Friday 21, and then you make Saturday 22 and Sunday 23, and then the rest of the program will be absolutely correct after that. It's also completely correct on our website. No mistakes at all on the website.
Excellent.
And the website is
yes.
vabook.org.
Actually, I found that pretty easy. There's so many that you have to go through. And we just did one of the underwriting pieces was something hyphen something something. Vabook.org.
Mm-hmm.
Just go to that. Vabook.org.
Right.
Again, Nancy Damon, she's the program director of the Virginia Festival of the Book. Sponsored by, provided by?
Produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities.
Again, let me ask a question that goes to all of our guests today. Now, Nancy, one of the topics that's included in the festival, and this is included every time, is writing a book or getting your book published, right? Mm-hmm. So who's coming to participate in that this year?
Well, we have Jane Friedman, who actually works for the Virginia Quarterly Review, but she's really a world-renowned person who talks about different platforms for being published. I'll let some of the authors talk about that because I'm not up on some of the platforms of getting published.
So let's talk about that. Now, we have, I don't know if they qualify as three different segments, but certainly have two nonfiction and one fiction. So how did each of you get your things published? Barbara, let's start with Barbara Perry and your I have all this here. And your book on Rose Kennedy, The Life and Times of a Political Matriarch.
All right. Well, I think this is a great story about the networking that goes on at the book festival every year. The night before the big event where everyone gathers on Saturday afternoon of the festival, I was producing another event, and someone came up to me and said, "What's your next book? You know, you've written on Jacqueline Kennedy." And I said, "Well, by chance, it's on her mother-in-law, Rose Kennedy, because her papers have just been released." And this person said, "Well, with whom will you publish?" And I said, "Well, I usually publish with academic presses. University Press of Kansas does a lot of history and politics." And they said, "Oh, but we know a semi-retired editor named Ed Barber in Charlottesville from W.W. Norton, and we'll pass along your name to him." And I ran into Ed Barber, had never met him, but was introduced by another friend and colleague to him at the big reception. And I said, "I was told to speak with you." He set up a lunch. And the next week, I had lunch with Ed Barber, who became my editor and got a contract for me with Norton. And just to show you how important that is, I just got my first statement from Norton in the first 3 months since Rose Kennedy's biography came out last July. They sold 20,000 copies, and that's more than all of my other academic books by academic publishers in my 30-year career.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Pretty sweet. Thank you to Ed and Norton and Amy Cherry from there as well.
And that's all from a little networking here in our area.
At the book festival in Charlottesville.
Excellent. Well, so pick up your festival guide. It'll be lounging around in your daily progress today or some of our other book-related areas. I'm sure it'll be at Barnes & Noble and New Dominion. Thank you. I was getting ready to give out the New Dominion.
And coffee you've got, shops.
Yeah. So, and then there's always vabook.org. So, Lex, let's talk with you. A fiction book in the sort of dystopian world, right, which I don't know how far back your original, your copy number one of the trilogy goes.
We were writing our first book before the Hunger Games movie and that whole sensation happened, and we were aware of the book as being popular in the young adult world, but it hadn't really crossed the threshold into the what it is now. So we were on the front end of that excitement about dystopia. We were struggling as screenwriters for quite a while. And someone asked us if we had any ideas that might fit as books for teens. And we were writing sort of broad comedy scripts, and that was our realm. But we always had ideas that we would jot down in the process of doing the work we needed to do on the task at hand. We'd think, we'd brainstorm ideas. And one idea was about just simply a high school as a nightmare. What would it be like if the social cliques were actually gangs that hunted you down in the halls? And, the jocks, the nerds, the geeks, all these cliques were actually tribes within a high school. And we ran with that. We created a scenario where a high school has been quarantined because the teens within have contracted a virus that makes them deadly to adults. And
that's still true.
That's still true. And so we ran with that, and we bit by bit, wrote chapters and created a proposal. And we had sample chapters and an idea of where the rest of the book would go and then where the trilogy would go. And we sold the idea off of that. And then, and that was a great celebration for us. And then reality took hold, and we realized we actually had to write the book. So from there, it's been 3 years that we've been, our minds have been trapped in high school.
So your screenwriting and your networking through screenwriting led you to getting these books published.
Yep, absolutely.
And then Paul Cantor, Barbara Perry talks about how her book was not published through academic press, but yours was?
Yes. Basically, everything I've published has been with an academic press. I'm an academic.
Is that in itself easy to make happen? Hey, I'm a professor and I'm going to write on this.
Oh, absolutely not. It's a terribly hard process. I've published 7 books. I still don't know how to get a book published. But basically, it is through a different form of networking. Basically, Invisible Hand in Popular Culture was published because the head of the University Press of Kentucky used to be an editor at Roman and Littlefield, and he was the one who published Gilligan Unbound, and he's always said that's his favorite book of anything he ever published in his career. So when he became the head of University Press of Kentucky, he basically commissioned another book on popular culture from me, and it's incredibly important to find editors you can work with and trust.
But, and then to everyone, how do you make that happen? Because, and Barbara, you mentioned networking, but I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that the very large percentage of people always talk about the day that I'm going to write my book, whether that's because they have something that they want to do now, whether that's their thought on after they retire from their regular job. So many people at some point in their life have mentioned writing a book. And all of you have pretty much said, that ain't so easy to get it published. You can write it, but then you got to get it published. Are there specific steps, regardless of what field you fall into, academic, nonfiction, young adult, that everyone needs to know, which would include coming to one of the book festival sessions on how to get a book published, I'm sure. Nancy, when is that?
All of the programs on getting published and publicizing your book are on Saturday, March the 22nd, and they're at the Omni Hotel. There are a whole series of programs on, you know, how to get an agent, how to hook an author on the first, I mean, how to hook literary people on your first page, building an author's platform, and so on. So people can get a feel for it. This year, for the first time, we're offering 2 programs specifically for high school students about writing, people who want to become writers. And those are really open to teenagers. I mean, I suppose you could slip in, but they might ID you. Those are going to be at the Village School.
I'm there, and I'm just watching out for someone that I know to behave during the show.
Sure.
Because that young adult fiction, all about dystopian worlds, I want to make sure that the person I know is not starting something. But again, back to Paul and Lex and Barbara, you talk about the organizations or the type of publishers that did your work. But how long or how many times through your careers have you found it to be, have you found a nice routine in which to make it happen? After the first or second time that you got your, you know, your book published, now is it just, okay, if I follow this process, do these steps 1 through 5, we'll get this book done too? Or is it, are you refresher course, you have to start over every new book?
I think you can never really rest on your laurels. You have to you have to keep in mind sort of the rules that got you sold in the first place. You have to apply to your next project, and you really have to think about your audience and who perhaps your reader is going to be. I mean, you should always write for yourself, But I think it's good to know who's going to buy your book. And you have to think about that every single time you go out.
You mean other than my parents?
Correct.
Barbara, you talked about switching from an academic to a nonfiction company. Would that...
Well, an academic press to a, what they call a trade, primarily a trade press, although Norton does a number of academic books as well. But that was a step I hadn't taken before, and I was excited to do. That had been an aspiration of mine for many years. And I discovered, just as my college advanced English composition instructor had said, that when writing for different audiences, one might want to write in different ways. And so I had been writing what my academic publishers had been saying was darn good writing, and then I turned over to a trade publisher for this book on Rose Kennedy, and it was a slightly different style that they wanted to appeal to a more general audience. And so I, who was used to very light editing, would send off my chapters, and back they would come with lots of red ink on them, and I wasn't used to that. And so I find that it helps to be very flexible and accommodating when dealing with different kinds of publishers. But I would also say to those aspiring writers, ask yourself, how do you do with New Year's resolutions? How long do you keep your New Year's resolution? Because it took me 6 years to write this book on Rose Kennedy from start to finish, and it's a hard slog.
Goodness.
I would like to jump in just for a minute. There are many new ways. Well, they're not so new right this now, but not going through major publishers, which has its advantages and disadvantages. I mean, a lot of people publish the books themselves now, or they do something called print on demand, or they go through a system where it's only a downloadable book. It's not actually a printed book. So that's one of the topics in the publishing day, and people may choose to go that way, but I would say to people something that Lex said, you have to start with a really good book, and that isn't always the case with people who use various routes. And then you have to make sure you still have a good editor and somebody who works with you in order for the book to be a success. You can certainly get it published. You can pay to get your book published, but in order for it to be really successful, it needs to be a good book.
Just a few minutes left with Nancy Damon before she goes and starts putting those tickets together. So a couple quick questions for you. When you look at the themes, the subjects for this year, there's fiction, nonfiction, children's poetry, and publishing. But then there's Crime Wave. Mm-hmm. Is Crime Wave specific to this year? Is that one of the highlights for this year?
No, I think this is about our 13th Crime Wave. People love crime. You may not, if you don't read crime, you wouldn't know that. But people love to read about crime, you know, good and evil and all those gray areas in between.
All right. So the last question for you, and I'm sure it's one that makes you cringe.
No.
It's supposed to snow tonight. What happens?
Snow?
It's
a four-letter word.
The festival doesn't start until Wednesday, and right. The weather is supposed to be, the bad weather over and the temperature going up mm-hmm. to melting levels. But there has to be some sort of fallback position for snow or other bad weather. How can people find out?
We don't have a fallback position because it's going to be fine by Wednesday.
Everything mm-hmm. is happening.
Mm-hmm. Virginia. Everything will try to happen. Let me just put it that way.
VABook.org. You can get your the new printed festival guideline from today's Daily Progress, from all number of areas around the city and the county, the different bookstores, et cetera. Anything else you want to share before
I let you go?
I
want to share two things really quickly. This book festival could not happen with a lot of other community organizations and businesses who help pull programs together. So I thank all of them. And you will see in your program the variety of people that have participated in that way. And the last thing I'd like to say is I always say to people, try something unexpected. You know, go to Cities of Poetry on Wednesday night, even if you don't think you're a big poetry fan. Try something new that's unexpected for you, and you'll really enjoy it. Thank you so much.
And there's 21 different locations. I was amazed at that. So you can't say, oh, I don't want to come into downtown Charlottesville. There are 21 different locations. If you want to find something new and different, find the location that is closest to your house and go to that.
Right.
All right, Nancy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And, you know, have a great festival. All right, we'll be right back. The more time here with Paul Cantor, Dr. Barbara Perry, and Lex Raby.
Support today for WNRN comes from
the Markets of Tiger Fuel Company, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street.
The Maudlin Center for the Arts at the University of Richmond, presenting Ethan Lipton and his orchestra's No Place to Go, March 20th and 21st in Rhythm Hall at Richmond Center Stage. This one-man show is equal parts love letter to his co-workers, query to the universe, and middle finger to corporate America. Details at maudlin.richmond.edu.
Hi, I'm Megan Hartless, a Breastfeeding USA accredited breastfeeding counselor. The Stanton Augusta chapter of Breastfeeding USA invites area moms to attend our monthly meetings in the nursery at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Stanton. The next meeting will be held April 3rd at 7 p.m. Meetings are open to all pregnant and nursing moms and their children, as well as anyone who is interested in learning more about breastfeeding. For information, meeting schedule, and directions, visit stantonbfcounselor.wordpress.com. I'm Megan Hartless, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection@wnrn.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And here we are today talking about the Virginia Festival of the Book. It starts on Wednesday, March 19th, and goes through next Sunday, the 23rd. Speaking of next Sunday here on the wake-up call, we'll be talking about the coal ash spills at Duke Energy near Danville. Be with us, Cale Jaffe from Southern Environmental Law Center will be here. Hopefully you will too. All right, so back to our guests. We have Paul Cantor here, author of The Invisible Hand in Popular Culture, as well as Gilligan Unbound. We also have Dr. Barbara Perry, her book Rose Kennedy, it's not like you never say that. Rose Kennedy, The Life and Times of a Political Matriarch, and Lex Raby, The Quarantine Series, The Loners, The Saints, and The Burnouts, the trilogy. But Paul, let's jump in with you for just a minute. So your event itself, Examining Popular Culture on Friday the 21st, can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, the other panelists are Margaret Talbot, who wrote a book called The Entertainer, David Skinner, who wrote a book called The Story of Ain't. I'm an English professor, but I have to say that Ain't. And Wendy Melillo, How McGruff and the Crying Indian Changed America. Now, I have to confess, I don't know these other panelists and have not read their books, but it does look as if we'll be coming at popular culture from several different angles.
Yeah, if you talk about McGruff, I mean, that's popular culture right there.
Yeah, I assume Ain't, the book with Ain't, is about popular language and how it infiltrates the culture.
And so you were here, again, we talked about your book back in August, I believe, of 2013, The Invisible Hand in Popular Culture, Liberty versus Authority in American Film and TV. The cover of your book is is it called The Spirit of 76?
Yes. And we have a few substitutions in it. John Wayne, William Shatner of Star Trek fame, and a distant cousin of Eric Cartman from South Park.
And so when we talk about the Spirit of 76, we're talking about the drum, fife, and flag picture from that most people, I mean, people would immediately recognize as being from 1776. And I always find that, tell the story about the distant cousin of Cartman.
Well, that's just for legal reasons there, because we didn't exactly secure the rights to use the image of Eric Cartman. Anyway, the book is about the rebellious spirit, the spirit of 76 in popular culture. I deal with Westerns, I deal with science fiction, with some horror movies. It's about that spirit of independence and self-reliance and how it has been celebrated, but also how it's been challenged in various movies and television. For example, go ahead.
I was going to say that one of the things I learned from reading it is that Star Trek is really a Western.
Yes, I mean, one of the things I try to show in the book is how these differences between Westerns, science fiction, are a bit artificial. Turns out that Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek, got his early start writing for Have Gun Will Travel, a Western, and I was able to show how things that happened in that Western happened then in Star Trek. I call the chapter The Original Frontier, that the final frontier of Star Trek was a variation of the old American frontier.
I found that to be so. I mean, it was not only enlightening, it was funny at the same time.
Well, I tried to be both enlightening and funny. Yes.
And those are the people I like to hang out with. And that's why your book is on my keeper bookcase.
Thank you.
So when we talk to all of our guests, again, Paul Cantor, Dr. Barbara Perry, and Lex Raby, you're all participating in the book festival. I'd like to know how each of you were approached to participate and whether you were like, oh, yeah, I'm not missing out on this, something that you've been waiting to do, or, you know, you went to your partner, your agent who said, oh, you shouldn't miss out. But Nancy's gone now.
Well, in my case, it was such a. I'm mainly speaking about last year, which was the first time I was part of the festival. For me, it was a chance to come back home and contribute to the community with things that I've learned, having been in Los Angeles and sort of made my way and created these books, and then be able to come back to Charlottesville, and because my audience is primarily teenagers, talk to them about the lessons I've learned building a career as a writer, and also just to share the books.
You mentioned earlier about the young adult fiction you started with teenagers, but that's not the case anymore. I mean, it's still the case you started with them, but that's not the only age group that's reading them now.
No. I say we, and I'm not speaking in the royal we. I don't tend to do that very often. I have a writing partner, Thomas Voorhees, and we bonded over... Historically, in our partnership, we bonded over 80s genre action and sci-fi films. And we bring that tone and spirit to this series. And as much as we're writing about high school and writing about relatable, I think, and universal teenage drama that happens in high school, we're also applying some of those genre elements that we love so much into this series, which is it has tones of The Warriors by Walter Hill and Escape from New York, John Carpenter's Escape from New York. And so that stuff is woven in there, and you know, we write for us, we write for folks our age as well. I think that most people have had high school experiences that are memorable and you never forget. And so I think that world and those themes are universal and they always apply.
It seems like I can smell the smoke from Paul's brain thinking that his next book, The Warriors and Escape from New York. That's the next generation of pop culture that I may need to move on to.
That's good stuff.
I'm a big fan of The Warriors.
I love The Warriors.
I am a big fan of The Warriors as well. So
it's based on Xenophon's Anabasis.
Oh, that's right.
See, you lost me there. But you know, if you write it down, I'll look it up when I get home. Dr. Barbara Perry, Presidential Oral History Program. My original question, or one of my questions for you originally was, how do you gather information on such close-tied subjects? Because when people think of the Kennedys, yes, they're in the population. There's a lot of information that's out there. But for many people, what the expectation is that the compound is closed. There are it's either out there for you to know about or you will never hear about it. And then you talk about Rose Kennedy keeping all these documents and information until she passes on at 105. Was it as difficult as I had originally expected to get all these notes?
It wasn't difficult to get the notes. Again, 250 boxes available at the Kennedy Library and their archives. But one is never quite sure if it's all there. There are times when I would open up a folder only to find an insert that would say, this material has been removed. And so one can ask for it and apply for it, but it would not always be available. Having said that, though, I think the family decided it was time. Rose passed on in 1995, and they released her papers in 2006. So they decided that at least what they had approved to go into those papers should be available. I did come across, for example, an oral history of Eunice Kennedy Shriver. And as she was speaking in her oral history in the early 70s, it was very clear that she was talking about her sister Rosemary. And many people will know that sad story that she was diagnosed with what was called mental retardation in the 1920s. And then in the early 40s, her father subjected her to a lobotomy that really infantilized her. And so we knew that, but we didn't know what the family had said about it other than in euphemisms. And so that was all redacted in the oral history. So I applied to the library to have that redaction removed, and it was. And I was able to have access to that. And I also had an interview with Rose's last surviving child of her nine, Jean Kennedy Smith, the former ambassador to Ireland in New York.
How many people get to write this book? I mean, if there's 250 boxes of material, is the original expectation that we're going to give this to one person or one group only?
No, these are open to the public. But it's funny that you should mention about other people writing. So about a year into my research, as I was signing out of the archives one day at the Kennedy Library, having done a very hard day of research, the archivist said, you do know there's someone else who's in the papers and who's writing a biography of Mrs. Kennedy. And I said, no, I didn't. Can you tell me who it is? And he said, no, I can't. And so for the rest of my 4 to 5 years of research and writing, I was pushing myself to get this book out to be the first. And indeed it was. I did discover who the other author was, but she's not released her book yet.
And did that other author know that it was you? Was there ever any contact I'm on page 400?
No, I've never been in contact with her, but I suspect because the Kennedys commissioned a biographer to write on their father, Joseph P. Kennedy, and that book came out called The Patriarch about 2 to 3 years ago, I suspect that this other person was commissioned by the family.
This is WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm Rick Moore. We're talking about the Virginia Festival of the Book. Nancy Damon, program director, could only stay for half the show before she had to leave and go back and start putting all the tickets together. We still have Dr. Barbara Perry, Lex Raby, and Paul Cantor here, 11:48 on the program. Let me remind you that there are many ways to stay connected to WNRN. We have free iPhone and Android apps created by Willow Tree Apps. They're available at iTunes or on Google Play. We also recommend TuneIn for your smartphone to listen to WNRN just about anywhere. And we stream 24/7 at WNRN.org. So remember, no matter where you go, you can take WNRN with you. And please remember, this show will be recorded and podcast. You can pick it up at WNRN.org, or you can go to SeavillePodcast.com, where there's a history of just about all the programs there, including the one from last August with Paul Cantor, who was with us. So, Lex, let's jump back to you, because one of the questions that I had down on my list is working with a co-author. I would guess, maybe unfairly, for Paul and for Barbara, you think of academic books. And again, Barbara's was this current one published as a trade book. But you think of professors working together, maybe not every time, but certainly not unusual for them to work together to co-write something, whether it's an article or a book. Is that true for either of you, Paul or Barbara? Have you ever co-written something?
Three articles I've co-written, but otherwise, no, I don't. It's said on my elementary school report card, doesn't work well with others. and that's proven to be true.
Is it fair to say that for a noticeable percentage of the academic works that there are professors working together?
It varies by field. In the hard sciences and the social sciences, it's a very common pattern. It's much rarer in the humanities for people to co-author books, though it does happen. I have a lot of friends in economics, and they can't understand why I don't want to work with them on articles. It's very embarrassing.
But Lex, you are a co-author, and mm-hmm. but it's almost, I don't know if you're intentionally doing it to hide it or not, but
Lex Thomas.
Right, Lex Thomas is actually, instead of saying Lex Raby and Thomas Voorhees, you actually have come up with some unusual, I don't know, ghost name fits into this category or not.
Yeah.
So how is it to do that?
Well, the name itself was our agent's suggestion, and we went with it. Initially, for a split second, there was the thought that we might create a persona for Lex Thomas, but that proved to be just as creatively taxing as writing a book, coming up with who this Lex Thomas was, and perhaps he was writing from a prison, you know, looking out the window, and that's the reason why you can't reach him. But we scrapped that, thankfully, because I don't know how we could do festivals like this unless the pair of us came out, and who knows?
Do it from prison.
That's true.
All right.
That's true.
Phone Skype. Calls only, though.
But as far as working together, we had been collaborating for 5 or 6 years, as I mentioned, writing screenplays, and that's more conducive to that sort of collaboration. There's a long tradition of writing partners in that realm. But as far as writing fiction goes, it was a new challenge, and it was a learning curve, not only for us writing our first novel, but also writing it with someone else and crafting prose together was interesting. But we drew on our strengths in the partnership, and that was very helpful, especially under duress with deadlines, as far as breaking story and problem solving, having someone else there to have another mind on the problem has always been really helpful as we've been mapping out a trilogy. And then our process has developed over the course of writing three books, but the rule for us is always what serves the story, you know, trying to tamp down the personal agenda is what we try to do, and we deal chapter to chapter. You know, sometimes it's a challenge because we have to literally. We just did this on wrapping up the third book. We had to go through paragraph by paragraph, and discuss. You know, what are we going to keep and what are we going to lose?
Do you like alternate chapters, alternate paragraphs, or you just sit down because somebody has to be.
There's a
somebody has to be the final word, or is that the?
It's pretty democratic, I would say. And initially, in getting the raw material out, Thomas does a first pass. I'll follow him with revisions or new avenues. And we'll do that chapter to chapter all the way through until the end of the first draft, and then we'll do a read. And for both of us, it feels pretty new, and so we'll take notes on that draft, and from there, then we might delegate chapter revisions or new chapters, new material that we feel like is missing, and then come back together again, and we'll just keep honing draft to draft.
All right, so tell us what your event, actually I think you have two events at this year's festival.
I will be speaking to the Field School in Crozet on Friday morning, and that's just for the Field School students. And then Saturday at 2 p.m., I'll be part of a young adult panel at the Village School called Out of This World. And I believe we'll be talking about, alternate realities or new worlds.
A question for all three of you. Is there some part of the aspect from idea to writing to editing to publishing that is the most difficult for you?
Getting started. Once I can get over that hump, I write very fluently. But there's a lot of psychological tricks I have to go through, including saying, well, you're not really starting. You're just sketching a few things in. I've been using that trick a lot lately. And then I suddenly find myself writing. And particularly, don't begin at the beginning. That's how you fool yourself into thinking you're not really starting. But you just got to write, basically. You got to get yourself writing. That's the hardest thing for people who don't do this to understand, that it is, there's something habitual about it. If you get out of the habit of writing, you're in trouble. And so keep writing. Even if you don't think you're writing, put something on paper.
And Lex, for you, is it the writing, the getting it published, the editing? What's the most difficult? The original idea?
I would say it's actually from project to project, it's the inspiration. It's what's the right idea to pursue, to dedicate 5 years of your life to, 3 years, 1 year, whatever it's going to be that you're going to commit to, you really want to make sure that it's worth it. And that can be, a lot of head games. You're playing with yourself at times, too.
So, Barbara, the difficult part for you, and then I want to talk about your event here.
Sure. For me, I don't start a project unless I'm passionate about the subject. So
I would think that 5 or 6 years would qualify.
Well, I learned that before picking a dissertation topic. A senior graduate student at that time said, pick a topic that you love because you'll be with it a long time. So I follow that with my subsequent books. But I would say for me, it was what I explained earlier, that different style of writing that was called for from what I was used to, and the fact that I'd mentioned that my first editor, Ed Barber, who was so wonderful with me on this project, but rather retired, went from semi-retired to retired halfway through the project. He continued to edit, but another editor was brought in. And while I think the combination of the two helped to make the book stronger in the end, it was just a little difficult because they had different views of the book and what it should be and different views of Rose Kennedy. People will see this final product. It may be a bit like sausage that I was seeing it made, and I hope that it'll be much more pleasant and palatable when I speak about it at 2 o'clock this coming Thursday at the Senior Center, using loads and loads of images and photos and videos of Rose Kennedy, because she was such a visual person and wanted to create, as you mentioned, that vision, and we'll call it the Camelot vision of the Kennedy family in American politics.
You talk about being at the Senior Center. Is yours a single presentation?
It is. Yes, it is.
And again, the day and time?
Yes, it's Thursday, March the 20th at 2 p.m. at the Senior Center.
Okay. So it's 11:58 here on the Wake Up Call, just a minute or so left. With our guests today, Paul Cantor, Barbara Perry, and Lex Raby, three people participating in this year's Virginia Festival of the Book, which starts Wednesday, March 19th. Is there anything that the three of you have seen or are aware of that you're going to go to? Realize that you all have full-time jobs and other places to be, and I'm picking you on the spot for this, and would anybody like to see the guidelines?
No, I know. Pick me. Yes, I also am a scholar of the Supreme Court and civil rights and liberties, so I'm going to be seeing Floyd Abrams, the great First Amendment scholar and practitioner, and he's being sponsored by the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. That's going to be Saturday at City Hall, and I believe that's 2 o'clock. talk, but people can check their programs.
All right. I'll let the other two of you off the hook because the show has time to finish up. Thanks to all of you, Nancy Damon, for help putting this together. She's the program director of Virginia Festival of the Book. Dr. Barbara Perry and her upcoming book, Rose Kennedy, The Life and Times of a Political Matriarch. Lex Raby, the Quarantine series, a trilogy, The Loners, The Saints, and The Burnouts. And Professor Paul Cantor, The Invisible Hand in Popular Culture, as well as Gilligan Unbound. Thanks to all of you for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
This has been your Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on WNRN. The Wake Up Call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong
and Max Cecilia Struther.
Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.